Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This is the Daily Tech News Show for Wednesday, December 29th, 2021 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt. Sarah and Roger and Joe and Amos, they're all around too. But it's time to look back on the year that was 2021. And as many of you know, we have DTNS, but we also have a longer show called Good Day Internet. So our producer, Joe, combed through both shows to look for some highlights that exemplify the big stories, the interesting discussions, the fun diversions we had on both shows. So here is the best of 2021. Enjoy. Have you had a chance to really like pay much attention to the CES stuff earlier in the week?
The video that breaks CES out into the news cycle is some ABC Good Morning America's cameras on a phone that rolls up, right?
Yeah,
or right. A television that splits into a tablet that splits into
a robot that can pour you wine. Yeah. This year you couldn't be there, so you couldn't have your host, you know, at the booth having the robot pour you a glass of wine, right? Because that's great TV.
Yes.
So you can't do that. And I think that contributes to Ryzen winning best of CES because it's a more conceptual thing, plays better in a world where nobody's actually in any of the booths, and all the political events and everything else just kind of meant like we don't have a dry news cycle, so we don't need to fill a slot.
Well, and yeah, although I do think that if there was a super compelling gadget, there is, for the reason that we're going to do the show that we're doing today that is not going to mention the politics stuff really at all, even in the way that we mention it normally on DTNS, that there would have been a place for the like, and here's the thing that your kid's going to love.
Because CES is always first and foremost a trade show. The whole kind of newsmaker aspect came, like big newsmaker, came a little later.
Like where did those news stories start?
No,
where
those news stories started with the companies that were producing them.
They started outside CES.
CES was their platform to push it out, but it wasn't like
CES. Three major waves over the last 10 years: smartphones, televisions in general, for which has still been a thing. 3D televisions is an example for which of an empty hype cycle for which televisions went through and CES played a part in. I'm not saying they invented it. I'm saying that they are the clearinghouse of the rubber meets the road again in a dead news cycle where these stories become talking points on a level that they don't otherwise, unless you are in this field. And then IoT,
the rollable foldable thing, is equivalent to 3D TVs. And if it was a normal CES in a dry news week, that it would be getting close to that. But I mean, totally agree with everything you said.
Vodka and clams, though?
In clam chowder, yeah.
In the clam chowder, yeah.
There's vodka in my clam chowder?
No, not yours, but if you want it to be better.
Really? Why did no one tell Sarah this before?
When you cook for a restaurant, a few shots into, like, you know, 3 gallons worth of clam chowder.
Alcoholic soup, no. That's... thank
have
you.
Have you ever try alcoholic soup before you give it a bad name?
We're not going to spend a lot of time on the show. We had texted about it. Did we want to go into it or just?
Do we want to go into hashtag hell portal, hashtag portal to hell regarding the suspension of the president from all these different platforms? We're going to have it in DTNS. It's going to be a quick hit. Part of here's all the technology stuff around what happened, but we're not going to have a big discussion about it.
Is this appropriate for the platforms? Mm-hmm. In the cultivation of the platform's own worldview, when do you deplatform somebody? When do you suspend them? Is there transparency on how long they're being suspended? What do they need to do to cure their suspension? And what we saw yesterday is what we've seen from all these platforms forever, which is, whose line is it anyway? Welcome to social media, where we make up the rules and the points don't matter. So
yeah, we clearly have rules that we will follow, and we just changed those rules.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't say that meaning I necessarily agree or disagree with their decisions, but if you're trying to see them as neutral players, I don't think that's accurate.
Them reacting to the moment, the controversy of the moment. And this is a massive controversy. I don't want to downplay what it is.
And they're making it up as they go along because there's no precedent.
And that's, I've made my intentions clear that this is indeed a hell portal, portal to hell. The only thing I would say is that this particular situation, because of the gravity of it, is not a portal to hell. It is indeed where hell. We arrive after we traverse.
After you go through the portal. I mean, in the wide scale of things, newspapers have been around for hundreds of years. Television has been around for almost 100 years. So they're learning right now. We can't look back and say, well, for a long time, it's been well established that this is what you do in that situation. That said, you can make judgments about if they have to make it up as they go along, how good are they at doing that?
I think that there is a tremendous problem with both Twitter and Facebook specifically, that they created a message board without mods and only admins. And if you create a world without mods and only admins, however you want to define what those would be on those platforms, then every decision that is made is a decision from God. And that's
no, but the community will moderate itself, Justin.
That's it.
I'm quoting Tom Merritt from Buzz Out Loud, circa 2008. Cloud was, so we had the net, right? That was the ability to even connect. Cloud was, we'll take your data and you don't have to have it local. Mm-hmm. What's decentralized? I'm not saying we will, but my hope is that we end, the next wave is a big decentralization. You get to control your data. It's not in any one place, so nobody else can control it but you. What would we call that?
Well, people talk now about data lakes.
Yeah, I was going to say media.
Yeah. What's decentralized lake? Minnesota.
Pond. Data pond.
Yes,
ponds.
There's over 1,000 of those.
I still think data lake and data pond and all that kind of stuff. Because then you can have rivers running between them and oceans for the big
one.
If
you make it a tributary or an estuary, then you can
ooh,
have
a delta.
So right. A delta could be the edge of the public cloud and your personal.
Oh, that's good.
Your private cloud could be the fresh water in the
and
public.
And it's distributed.
All
It's distributed. So there's a bunch of these little lakes and then there's the ocean. And so it's the data.
So then your data lakes works with the delta.
Yeah. So, underground. Yeah. I was going to say data aquifer, right?
Data dams.
Reservoir.
Yeah. Reservoirs.
Okay.
Your personal data reservoir.
Right. Your data lake is your personal backup, but then you also want it to be backed up somewhere else securely.
You need to have potable data.
Need to have potable data. That do not poop in my data, kids.
Oh, seriously. GameStop stock started January at $18 a share, quite a bit up from the $3.30 a share it had been trading at in the summer. But it rose even more, 69% January 22nd, triggering a halt to its trading. Then Monday, this past Monday, January 25th, its trading was halted 9 times. It reached $224 a share on Tuesday evening and was past $300 early Wednesday. Molly Wood, why is this happening? How did this start?
this is happening because I guess the sort of shortest possible version is that the internet has discovered the world's largest casino. And you have this sort of confluence of things happening, right? Trading is way more accessible in part because of Robinhood. You named an app Robinhood. What did you think was going to happen? People remain super furious about things like the 2008 financial collapse and also shorting. And there's like no small amount of kind of Tesla fanboy rage that's playing into what were happening here. People were angry at all of this shorting of GameStop. That also left markets totally vulnerable to what we're seeing today. And they've suddenly figured out how to apply like crowdsourcing and actually what I've been calling Google bombing to the stock market. They're coming from primarily this Reddit board called Wall Street Bets, this subreddit. And it's existed for a long time. And it's a place to, you know, it's got like hardcore day traders in it. Some people who might have at some point been working for the same firms that are engaged in this activity right now. This, again, this combination of events, maybe a little extra money, maybe more time on their hands about the pandemic, maybe just this kind of like pent up rage about inequality and this kind of edgelord troll sensibility. That just said, like, we can do this thing for the lulz.
You put this, you call it the dirty old trick, a trick that's been going on for a long time. Does this move the needle at all in any sort of regulatory direction? Or is it still just a dirty old trick that a bunch of internet trolls figured out how to exploit?
I mean, I think it is just a dirty old trick that internet trolls figured out how to exploit. Like, so far, all of it is legal. There are, that we know of, right? There are certain rules around market manipulation. But I think that like organizing all your friends out in the open to all buy the same stock probably does not violate those rules. Short selling, at least now, doesn't violate any rules. And to be honest, if I thought there was going to be a regulatory response to this, I would imagine that it would protect the hedge funds and not the Redditors. Like, I don't think they're going to make rules against short selling. If anything, if there is regulation that results from this, it will probably hurt individuals who want to buy into the stock market. And that's actually very bad. Like the worst outcome here is that by showing how manipulatable this system is and by doing things that are perfectly acceptable behavior when they're done by hedge funds or even investment banks, it's possible that you would have regulators come in and go like, maybe everybody who buys into the stock market has to be accredited, or maybe if there's a certain amount of volatility and everybody's trying to buy the same stock at once, we just don't let them.
Reddit's not saying GameStop's going to make a comeback. They're just saying, let's all pile in and buy it and screw over these short sellers. So you would have to find another way to say they're doing something illegal, and you'd have to figure out who to prosecute. There's not a particular ringleader.
How a lot of big firms have bought the rights to early trading information on Robinhood. They can essentially front run these trades. So like a firm called Citadel might realize that everybody's buying into GameStop, get on board with that, make a ton of money, and then loan that money to bail out Melvin Capital, and then have that money be invested later and make money on it. Right. So like at the end of the day,
two Citadels, by the way, if you're out there reading this, there's Citadel Securities, which has a deal with Robinhood, and then there's Citadel, which is doing what Molly's talking about. And they're both going to benefit from this.
And they're both going to benefit. Exactly. Like at the end of the day, we shouldn't shed too many tears for what we think of the establishment investors, because all of those same investors are going to make money. Some retail investors on Reddit are going to make a lot of money. Some retail investors on Reddit are going to be left holding the bag, because right now there's a lot of pressure on them not to sell, even though the stock is really high and they could have made a lot of money. And so then now you're going to have this weird game theory thing to see who sells first, which will cause the price to go back down. And some individuals may lose an incredible amount of money.
The whole thing is a dangerous game. It's twisted and crazy. I just can't believe it's all over a company I used to trade Madden 05 in for $10.
The incoming head of the Senate Antitrust Subcommittee, Senator Amy Klobuchar, plans to introduce a new antitrust bill targeted at big tech companies that would place limits on acquisitions. If the bill became law, here's how it would shift the burden of proof onto companies with more than 50% market share. So that's how this bill would work. It would work by shifting the burden of proof, and I'll explain what that means in a second, and it would only apply to companies with more than 50% market share, which right now, that's a lot of big tech companies. If you are one of those companies, you would have to prove that an acquisition would not create an appreciable risk of materially lessening competition. In other words, if this were the law now, and Facebook were buying Instagram now, Facebook would have to prove that buying Instagram wouldn't hurt competition rather than what they had to do under the current law, which is having investigators prove. Like you would, right under the way the law used to work, you had to prove that it would hurt competition for Facebook to buy Instagram. They want to change the law to say Facebook has to prove it won't. Some conduct would be presumed anti-competitive unless the company can prove otherwise. So let's say Amazon shuts a company off its platform for what it says were violations of policy. Right now, the company that got shut out would have to go to court and prove that it wasn't just a violation of policy, it's anti-competitive. Under this bill, Amazon would have to prove why it was not anti-competitive. And a large company could face antitrust liability even if the market in which it took place was not precisely defined by the claimant. There's a whole load of complicated case law around market definition. For instance, and I won't go down this rabbit hole now, but apparently Pepsi and Coke have been ruled in court not to be in the same market because brand loyalty makes customers less price sensitive. So Justin, this is just Amy Klobuchar trying this again. She apparently tried it in the last Congress. It didn't float then. Got any chance of floating now?
You need 10 members of the opposite party. So I don't know if immediately this would get all 50 senators from either party. It would be curious to see whether or not this is something that you could rally the banners and pitch a perfect game on if Amy Klobuchar wanted to get all of the Democrats on board. Some might not see that it goes far enough because it doesn't break up certain tech companies, something that Elizabeth Warren has pushed. Some might think that it goes too far on the blue dog side, like on Joe Manchin.
What I don't like about this kind of bill is having it targeted at big tech. I don't like laws that are made for specific companies, and this reeks of that a little bit. But what I do like about it is that it's not making major policy changes. It's just trying to adjust the levels and say, let's make it a little easier for someone to prove an antitrust case because we're going to shift the burden of proof. I haven't worked through all the implications of doing that. Maybe if I did, I would be horrified by it. But in principle, that seems to be a better way to go around adjusting things than to have these more extreme measures, at least to me.
Hold on. We forgot something.
Oh, let's check in with Lamar, who's been illustrating today's show.
Today's Friday. Yeah. So this is a sad family who has a. I took a long time to draw this, guys.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They're sad because they live at the end of the zip code and they don't have internet.
Right.
Yeah. So we
is wanna... that how it works? The person at the front of the zip code gets the one internet connection, and then
So your 30 cents can help this family. Oh, he had. Oh, wow. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? Tom, are you kidding me? No way.
Your picture looks a lot like Lamar.
It's very nice. Yeah.
Wait, Super Bowl. That's great. What, Super Bowl 15? When
Super
was
Bowl
that?
15.
I don't count.
Did you spell Philadelphia with two L's?
It looks like I did. Yeah.
Okay.
How about this turkey that I drew?
That is epic. You know what?
Here's a train that I drew. Goes to Chicago.
Okay, I really do want to know. I'm with Sarah now. Why do you have these?
I had a brief career as a cartoonist. This is Super Duck with two C's.
Very neat of you.
Super Duck.
I never finished the last frame, apparently.
It ain't it
Justin
ain't
Robert Young.
Yes.
Going to Texas.
I am. Yeah, you know, it's a city that I spent a ton of time in because of Brian and South by Southwest and all that. It just kind of feels like the right move. Although the fact that it is going to snow here on Monday is not something that I'm excited about.
Well,
I didn't know that
now.
It did that.
You're going to get blamed is what's going to happen. People are like, oh, you buy a house in Texas and then it snows and it's 9 degrees.
Well, I'm getting the hell out of here. So, like... I'm leaving on Friday. What I've heard is that this kind of weather is once in 100 years kind of thing. So in a lot of ways, I'm pretty excited that I'll be moving in.
Because they got it out of the way.
Yeah. So we can reset that clock to 100 years.
Awesome.
What was the movie about the room?
That one. The one with Franco.
Yeah.
Yes. James Franco.
James Franco.
That, I think that was the last movie I saw in the theater. It was Christmas Day, three years ago.
Disaster Artist, that's it.
At the end of Disaster Artist, you know, when they like kind of like roll the credits where it's like, Tommy Wiseau, blah, 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 you know, and it's like, no one knows where Tommy Wiseau is actually from. Fade to black. Where I was like, really? That's the end of the movie?
Yeah.
Oh.
Nobody knows where I'm actually from. I made up this whole backstory about Greenville, Illinois, and
I never believed it.
Paid some people off to.
Tom came out of a photo match
with your kind of like, oh, I'm like close to St. Louis thing. Never believed it.
And then people are like, wait, but you sound nothing like you're being like the people from that area, Tom.
He even faked that little clip of him when he was supposedly much
younger. That's an actual person. It's just not me. Yeah.
It was pretty obvious, Tom.
Yeah.
Glad we're just finally airing it out.
I know.
Greenville.
And I'm going to admit that this is a green screen behind me. It's time to let go of all the illusions.
I had to delete TikTok.
Because why?
Because it was too addictive?
Absolutely right. Yeah, I downloaded it for a story because I was trying to find something else that was trending on TikTok. And I opened it up to search for that particular hashtag, and then 17 hours later I thought, whoa, this is bad.
I found the compliment rap battles, where instead of tearing the other rapper down, you're trying to compliment them.
I found some lyrics, some compliment battle lyrics here. Would you like to hear some example?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I'm terrible at rapping compared to you, plus your voice is nice and your hair is too. Give a high five to your parents, dude.
That sounds like it rhymes.
Okay.
Give props to your mums and props where it's due, because they did a good job taking care of you. You should take a day off like Ferris Bueller.
Ah, right. Yes. That's where the rhyme gets kind of fun.
I like how your breath is fresher than 60 Tic Tacs. You can bag a beat like those Hickory Stick Snacks.
You know, that totally sounds like the Sugar Hill Gang could totally do that. And it would sound not out of place.
Somehow you became whiter there, Tom.
Oh.
Jack Dorsey's first tweet has sold for $2.9
million.
Why?
There's some NFT things where I'm just like,
it's grown. It's newsworthy, but it's also grown-worthy.
Yeah.
So help me with the metaphysics of this.
Metaphysics?
Because mentally I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, it's the first edition. Of course, we printed the first edition to everyone who was in a bookstore. So there's, you know, well, probably dozens at that point, or maybe even hundreds. Like, I don't know how many people were on Twitter when Jack sent his first tweet. Like, how do you, you know,
right.
You're asking how people are objectively determining the value of something that's relative.
No, I'm not what the market will bear. I'm not asking for objective value. What I'm literally asking is, you know, given that the first tweet happened over a decade ago and was published to everyone on the service at that time, which was probably a really short list, but, you know, what is the first tweet, right? Because does a tweet exist until other people read it? If there are 50 people on the service or 50,000 people on the service, which one is the first tweet? Like,
Taoist,
did he basically say, this is the first tweet I sent and I am making it a thing and now I am selling your rights to the first tweet, which is like, you know what I mean? It's like if lawyers made art for people who like to, you know, if lawyers made art for hustlers, it sounds a lot like this. Great that it made $3 million for charity.
How searching for help online can be healthy. And I think we all agree that the last year has affected us all, sometimes not in the greatest of ways. Mental health is a big concern. So if you want to help yourself, do you search online? Well, aren't you supposed to talk to a doctor? Isn't it kind of dangerous to self-diagnose? But Peter, you found some recommendations that searching for help with mental health online isn't always a bad idea. And you just have to go in certain directions, huh?
Yeah. It's really important to kind of evaluate the sources. Like anything on the internet, there's going to be fantastic advice out there, and there's also going to be really, really terrible advice. So the trick is to figure out how to tell those two bits of advice apart. I was reluctant to kind of name any sources as being, look, you can trust everything that these people say, because I'm not a doctor myself. So I felt very uncomfortable offering that advice. But I guess the rule of thumb that I found in the last week looking at this stuff is just ignore the stuff that says that, hey, we're going to cure you of your anxiety or your depression by the time you get to the end of this YouTube clip or whatever it is. Anything that says that it's going to be an easy fix, I think, starts to feel a little bit kind of self-help guru-y and not so valuable. But I found that there were some really, really great sources. And to be honest, this all did come about because Google did an update to their search product where if you do a search on depression in both the United States and in Australia, you will be presented with this 9-question questionnaire, which is used to screen potential patients at psychology departments around the world to see kind of where you fit on the depression and anxiety scale.
Even with physical ailments, you know, you've got a sore arm, you start searching sore arm, and then the next thing you're certain you have some wild, rare disease that you'd never heard of before because you're searching.
I wouldn't also necessarily trust any of the recommendations I would see in some of these self-help kind of or support groups that I found on Facebook. But the very nature of just joining into one of those groups and seeing that you're not alone in any of the anxiety or depression that you might be feeling, because this has been a really trying year, as you said, Sarah, that, you know, that this, it's not surprising if you're doing it tough at the moment. And there is absolutely no shame in looking at that, admitting that, and seeking help.
I try to think of it the same way. You know, it's like my shoulder hurts. My shoulder still hurts. I'm a little worried about my shoulder. Well, let me go online and see if I can get, you know, some help from an expert. Well, does the shoulder expert who's telling me what I should do have credentials? Do they work for a publication that I like and trust? You know, is there a history of information in the past that has been helpful? It's like, it's all kind of the same thing. And it's easy to say, oh, well, just do it that way. But I think for a lot of folks, it is an ongoing process.
Totally, totally. And, you know, the final thing I would say is just psychology and therapists can seem very, very expensive, but I didn't include this in the story because it had to be for print, so it had to be shortened. But you go to psychology in your state and do a Google search there, you'll find there are always kind of free clinics or free support out there. And quite often universities will have low-cost people that you can see as well. So yeah, explore what is out there in the physical world as well as online, but online is a great place to start.
When your eye swells up from allergies, I don't know, just picking that at random, you go to the doctor. You don't feel ashamed, Tom.
You go
to the doctor. You're like, hey, my eye swelled up, and you're like, oh, let me give you some medicine for that, right? Mental issues shouldn't be any different. You know, I struggle with anxiety problems, but over the years, doctors have tried different things and we've been able to track it down to most likely being something with my thyroid, and thyroid medication has made a world of difference for me in managing it. As has cognitive behavioral therapy, just to kind of deal with the symptoms. And, you know, there's no shame in any of that. It's like, any more than there'd be like, oh, I had to put this ointment on a cut to heal this antibiotic ointment. It shouldn't be any different.
As human beings, we're so good at being, you know, compassionate and supportive.
Empathetic, yeah.
And empathetic to other people. But then we screw up once and we just, you know, we think about it constantly, and we're so less compassionate to our own selves.
The puns only safe everybody. Comedy is a pun.
Puns
Actually,
hurt
that's
everyone.
Not even true.
Tom.
Yeah,
that's yeah.
And you could make a really tasteless pun.
No one wins.
Lion Jim Video says, I think puns are illegal in China and North Korea. They are illegal in North Korea. That I believe they are just highly regulated in China. You have to submit your pun to a ministry.
Okay. And then I thought you were being serious, darn it. For a second, you actually got me.
This is Tom's stand-up routine, Lamar. Yeah.
See, the victim there was North Korea. No one minds. Okay, hold on. Jim Video in our Discord just sent an LA Times article titled, No Laughing Matter, China's Media Regulator Bans Puns. 2014, LA Times.
Oh, 2014.
Yeah. The State General Administration of Press, Publication, Radio, Film, and Television issued an order restricting puns and irregular wordplay on television and in advertising.
Oh, wow.
Because puns could mislead young readers and make it more difficult to promote traditional Chinese culture.
I guess that's true sometimes, but that's
maybe it just needs more fiber.
This is amazing. Go ahead. Wang Chaoyu, the former dean of the School of Communications at East China Normal University, said, the big difference in the internet age is that the people who have the privilege of creating puns and idioms have changed. It's no longer restricted to the elites or the well-educated. So we have to ban them.
Yeah. Puns are running rampant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's on that train.
You can't have that lowbrow, everyday common man pun just running amok.
You can't just have anyone making a pun.
I know.
Chaos.
For I have finally met my harassing four-legged rodent, and I have dispatched him.
Right. Anybody who's been following Roger's rat hunt.
Rat hunt. Ooh, that sounds like a great board game.
Audio listeners, I'm sorry. You cannot see that Sarah has achieved her dream.
What?
Is there something on my face?
Yeah. The rat head. Yeah. Is that a mouse, though? That might be a mouse.
Snap Camera said it was a rat filter. So
okay, all right. Yeah. Nice. I'll take Snap Camera at its word.
Yeah,
it's time to start the show. No,
I feel like you guys could get over it, but I will change it back because we are professionals. Sometimes people say you need a better camera. Oh my gosh, there's a spider on my monitor. Okay, I'll just keep going. It's sort of you want to get into video podcasting, start with that. It's relatively cheap and does a good job. And this seems like, for $70, it seems to be right in that wheelhouse.
How's the spider?
The spider is dead.
Oh, well,
I'm sorry. It just wasn't something I could deal with for the rest of the show.
I understand. We understand.
Can I introduce you guys? I don't know if this is her DTNS debut, but my mom is here.
Oh my gosh.
Please bring Gloria onto our stream.
Show yourself. Yay.
Ladies and gentlemen, presidential vote receiver, Gloria Young.
That's me, apparently. Yeah. Well, it's nice to meet all of you as well.
I feel like I know you because I've heard you on all of Justin's podcasts. But yes, it's lovely to say hello.
Well, that's great. It's good to be here. Very happy to be visiting.
What do you think of the house?
I love it.
Oh, good.
Okay. Love it. And we just did a little Austin tour. We went to see the state capitol. We went to SoCo. Mm-hmm.
South of Congress. All right. Nice.
Yeah. So it's cool. Love being here.
Oh, that's great. Oh, it's so nice to say hello to you.
Okay. Take care, everyone.
All right. Thanks,
bye.
Gloria.
Gloria.
Gloria Young, ladies and gentlemen. Gloria Young.
You know, it was your conversation with her on the PX3 Extra this morning that prompted me to tweet about 1979.
You just got a very audible, from Glowbug as she made her way downstairs.
You know, Owen, Tom's least favorite pie is an apple pie, which says a lot.
So, well, I don't know if you should know that me and Tom have a tumultuous relationship. You know, again, I tell everyone this. But
Of course. And of course it goes to pies.
How are you going
to
say apple pie? How un-American is that? Huh?
You got me on the ropes now. So nothing I say, can get me out of this apple pie hole that I've been cast in.
Again, I'm all American classics when it comes to pies.
See, cherry pie is number one for me. That's the best.
That's because your Roman love was such a sweet surprise. Sweet cherry pie.
I'm a big Warrant fan.
Oh, you're yeah. Right.
Well, I know that's what it is.
That. You probably never had a cherry pie. You're just singing the song in the back.
But I have the CD single from Warrant right now.
If you'd have had that, I might have just please got on the
plate. And I don't know how to break my tie for third because pumpkin sweet potatoes, like they're.
It's a difficult conversation because you're like, no, I know what I like. And then you're like, oh, no, pumpkin.
That was my
number one.
Where's pecan
pie? I feel like
pie?
Now is the right time to admit that I've never had a sweet potato pie.
We all know you haven't had a sweet potato pie because you put pumpkin pie so high.
I might find out.
I've got a pie guy. He'll make it. He'll freeze it. And I will ship it to you overnight.
I have a pot. Wait,
I send stuff. I'll ship it. I'm not playing.
I accept.
Yes, it's going to happen. I'm so excited.
That was the pleasantest of shows.
Oh, I'll tell you what. It was double stuffed, man. We were hitting the red lights. That's always good,
man. You would think that we were Lyndon Baines Johnson the way that we were dangerously ignoring the Reds.
That's a winner right there.
There's somewhere I just know there. It's 100%. Curry level confidence with jokes that Tom will laugh.
Talk about first party targeting, right? Like,
oh yeah, no, that was full of personal information. That was pre Cambridge Analytica, pre Apple ad shutdown, Facebook level targeting.
The only one person who would enjoy that joke more than I did was Richard Nixon.
I can't remember the Judas Priest guitarist. Do you hear about this, by the way?
Well, I don't think I have.
Okay, yeah. So he had a bypass or something.
This is like a recent story?
Recent story. Yeah, he did a heart bypass thing, whatever. He's, you know, getting on his years, but great recovery, doing great. They're on tour. They have a new album. So he's up there, all those old Judas Priest guys up there, and he's wailing on some solo that he's famous for. And then during that, he could tell something was wrong, but wasn't totally sure what. But apparently one of the valves or something busted and started just pumping blood into his chest cavity while he's doing this solo.
Epic solo.
Yeah, and he finished it before it.
Yeah.
Which tells me that's the most metal thing anyone's ever done before. That is the most metal thing I've ever heard of.
I'm literally having chills right now just thinking.
I know, right?
If I remember the story correctly, that he went off stage for a few minutes and was seen for it and then went back out and finished the show and then went to the hospital.
Yeah, he thought he could just get through it. That's happening right then while he's going and his heart's all.
I don't think I could watch that.
Yeah, it was hard. Yeah. It was hard for me.
Anytime I have an anxiety attack, and anybody who has anxiety attacks knows this, you have to convince yourself you're not having a heart attack, right?
Oh, yeah.
And my greatest fear is that I will do too good of a job and convince myself I'm not having a heart attack when I'm actually
having one.
My valve has broken and it's pumping blood. Keep playing the solo. It's just an anxiety attack. I'm fine.
I didn't know you and I shared that one thing because I do that all the time when that happens.
Yeah.
And you do. You get good at it, right? So you're good at controlling it. You're good at knowing when they recognizing the
fear
signs.
Fear is the mind killer. Fear is
But then eventually when it really happens, if it does, are you going to be all, no, I know what this is. I'll just do the old routine.
Just calm down, Tom.
Yeah, calm down. Do your guitar solo while your heart fills, your chest fills with blood.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Stark Squirrel. This seems fine.
Yeah, this is fine.
Is it possible to summarize the metaverse, Nate?
Heck, I'm going to do my best. I think there is this expectation that a lot of people have that the metaverse is actually something that we can define today. And it's something that companies like Facebook and Microsoft now are trying to do. And it generally feels like most people's perception is that the metaverse is just around the corner and it's something to do with VR and 3D worlds. The reality is much, much more likely that what we think of the metaverse as being is probably 10, 20 years away from now. If you take a little step back, a key component to what will make the metaverse a metaverse is not whether it's 3D or not. It's not whether it's VR or not. It's whether objects, things, experiences, purchases, objects, things can move from one bit of a metaverse to another and retain that portability, retain that value. You can take that virtual object and you can go and put it in something in Minecraft, or you can move it over to something you're playing in Roblox. Or if you're a child and you're playing Roblox and you've built something or you've created something, but then 10 years later you're older and you're not playing Roblox anymore, but you really like that thing that you did, you in a metaverse as we envision it, you should be able to take that from Roblox and take that with you as you grow and mature. That thing that you have should be able to move with you, and you should be able to pass it on and sell it or what have you. It should retain that value. If you think back to the early days of the web, the web was created after the internet. It was a thing you could use the internet for, but it was created by researchers and scientists and, you know, the military to a certain extent, and geeks in schools and in research facilities. And it wasn't driven by a commercial interest, shareholders and so forth.
Do you think that fits in with what Andrew Bosworth was saying at Facebook Connect when he described it as something in the internet right now is something you look at? When the metaverse has kind of arrived, it'll be something you're in.
I agree with part of it. I think VR will be a way of interacting with the metaverse in the way that a high resolution screen is a better way of interacting with the web than a very low res, tiny little screen. It's this, you know, fundamentally underneath the surface, underneath the screen or the VR glasses or whatever, the information, the objects, the experiences, they're all basically the same, but are the ways in which we interact with it, that's kind of how things are being shaped and made exciting, frankly, and probably made commercial. So I would agree with a lot of what he's saying, but you know, it's going to be very interesting, but I'm skeptical that any one company can do this. It has to be open by design.
Yeah. Oh man, we're getting Zoom bombed. Who's that? Who just joined the call?
I don't know.
Who is this mysterious person?
Why are we saying Zoom?
Because people understand that term. Oh. Even though if you say Skype bomb, like, hey Sarah Lane,
hi, hello, Lane. Hi,
hello
everybody. I'm sorry I missed the good day internet.
Oh you missed it. It was now great.
But I'm here now.
How's it feel to be back in the saddle there?
It feels good. It feels really good. I kind of hope to be back sooner than this, but
understandable.
Really, really glad to be back. I missed everybody a lot.
Ah, we missed you too.
Thank you.
Do you see all those Sarah emojis in chat right now? It's like a wall of Sarah.
I'm not looking, but thank you in advance. Don't make me cry.
We won't. All right. It wasn't all fun, but in general, that was a lot of fun. That's it for this episode of DTNS/GDI. We're live Monday through Friday, usually 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Of course, we're not live again until January 4th. But starting January 4th, go to dailytechnewsshow.com/live. And we're back tomorrow right here in this feed with our predictions results show, where we're going to judge how well we predicted the tech landscape of 2021 back at the end of 2020. No one should have to spend New Year's Eve alone. Every year, Ritual Misery presents the Diamond Club New Year's Eve Streamathon, 27 hours of raising money for sick kids through extralife.org. This year, Sarah and Tom, that's me, will be bringing in the new year with a live show. Join us on New Year's Eve at 2330 UTC, 1530 Pacific for Good Year Internet. You can find all the details, including the full schedule, at ritualmisery.com/streamathon.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners.
Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.